Hi, this is Steve, who just joined us on the phone.
Fred,
we're getting ready to start momentarily. We are currently broadcasting, but we have not started the meeting yet.
Thank you.
Technology group down.
Good afternoon. This is a meeting of the Colorado Voter Access and Modernized Elections Commission. The time is 1:05, and the date is July 11th, 2014. The first item on the agenda is an invitation for public comment. Is there anyone here who wishes to give public comment? Why don't you come on up, and why don't you just have a seat, and we'll see how this goes right here. Because maybe we can clear up the issue, just so you'll be on the mic, too.
Hi, I'm Jennifer Levin. I just wanted to make the committee aware that I submitted an application for a vacancy that was left by Cynthia Acree as the advisor for disability rights issues to your committee. I'm an attorney with the Legal Center for People with Disabilities and Older People, and I also coordinate the VOTE program within that organization. We're the protection and advocacy organization for the state of Colorado. Which we represent people with civil rights issues regarding disabilities and in all sorts of realms, housing, employment, education, and I specifically focus on elections. So I thought, you know, this might be a good opportunity for me, and I could also be helpful to the commission in advising the Secretary of State's office with issues regarding people who have accessibility issues in the election process. So if you have any questions, I'd be happy to answer them.
When you say you applied, who did you apply through?
It was on the website for the Secretary of State's office.
Okay.
It was an application online, so.
Okay, so maybe we just didn't send it over to the governor's office. They're the ones who do the clearance for boards. They just do the background checks and that sort of thing. So it was our intent to appoint you. So on behalf of the secretary, I'll just conditionally appoint you today, and then we'll send your application through, and as long as you haven't been convicted of a felony or, you know, fraud or something.
Nope.
I don't know what to do.
Not yet. I won't.
Then it'll be approved in the background check, and then that way, then we'll get you your formal letter of appointment. So we'll just do a conditional appointment today on his behalf, and then I'll sign something probably in the next week. So why don't you just join us today, if you don't mind, so
that'd be great.
Can get you in on the ground floor. And
okay, and I think it was through the Secretary of State's office. It could have been the governor's website, but I can go back and look through my emails and see where I found it. It was a couple months ago, I think.
Okay. Did you forward it to Lisa Duran, or you don't?
No, I didn't. Okay. It automatically went somewhere. I submitted it. And
then you probably did it through the governor's office.
Okay.
And since it wasn't his appointment, maybe it just kind of went into the ether.
Yeah.
So, exactly. If you could forward that application to me, if you find it again, and then I will get it. It only takes a couple days. We'll get it through the system and get you formally appointed.
Oh, great. Okay? Cool. Thanks. All right. So just let me sit here.
Yeah. Okay. Anybody else who wanted to speak in public comment? Right. So then the first item on the meeting agenda is an update from the technology group on the development of a web application for the VSPCs.
And Suzanne, maybe before Scott gives us the update, we have a new commissioner, so maybe we could have Jason introduce himself.
Sure. Jason.
Thank you. My name is Jason Syme. I am on behalf of here with the America Votes, so I'm happy to be here. I don't know if I take any questions or anything, but just quick introduction. Thank you.
You don't want to give us your big background like she did?
Besides being the director for America Votes, I also teach yoga. I can go into more detail, but lived off and on in Colorado since 2008. So I'm happy to be on the board.
Okay, great. Thanks. Welcome.
Thank you.
Okay.
I know I need to raise my hand. Are you ready for me?
Thanks. We're
okay.
Ready.
As noted, my name is Scott Atkins. I am the project manager for the VSPC project. And the project has been and remains in a green status, which means it's being delivered on schedule and within budget, which is obviously good news. A little bit about the project, how we attacked it, if you will. From a software development perspective, we did what's called an iterative style, and I won't bore you with a lot of technical terms, but an iterative approach where we broke down the requirements into segments and delivered those approximately every 2 weeks. And the reason why we did that is, and it's becoming more common in the industry to take that approach, was to avoid any surprises at the end of the project. So every 2 weeks you have a kind of a mini release. You do testing, do some demonstrations, things like that. So again, you won't have any surprises at the end. We had a total of 8 of those. The 8th one is just wrapping up. And as from a testing perspective, the overall functional and regression testing for these modules or releases that I just mentioned is about 70% complete, so that's timely. We have, and Dwight Shellman's here with me, we have done completed 3 county demos for the small, medium, and large counties, showing them the functionality. Good news, we had very few, I think, questions overall. Some good questions, but very few, which I took as a positive. Had quite a few positive comments about what they saw. So from that perspective, everything looks pretty good. We have engaged with an outside vendor to do what we call security and performance testing. And security and performance is just as the words mean, security, seeing if they can penetrate where they shouldn't penetrate, the software, Performance, obviously, making sure that it performs as it should. And that was signed and engaged on Monday of this week. We've engaged with them. They're off and running, and that should go through July and part of August. From the overall project perspective, we do what we call risk assessments throughout the project, or actually more so in the beginning, but we monitor them throughout the project. We conducted three different risk assessments, one with the business, one with our technology team, and then one with the counties. And through those risk assessments, we obtained 51 risks that we have logged and are tracking them. Out of those 51 risks, we do a risk analysis and a scoring from a likelihood, if the risk should occur, how likely is it to occur, and as well as if it does occur, what's the magnitude of that risk. And so the compilation of those two scores, if you will, provided five major risks. And those five major risks are being tracked very finitely, very much to the day, making sure that we don't achieve those risks, and we have mitigation plans and risk responses in place. As far as the schedule goes, again, we're on track with the development, the testing, the security and performance testing. UAT, which is user acceptance testing, will occur in August, as well as the mock election. So overall, I've been on the project. I came in April, I believe, Dwight. I think overall it looks very good. Things are on track within the budget. So that's where we are. Any questions I can answer?
Anybody have any questions?
So can you talk a little bit, it's been a little while since we've talked about the web app and its functionality, and my understanding was that for address changes and issuances of new ballots, that's what it was going to do. Is there a plan to work in over time new registrations as well, and how does that fit in? And I know that's not for this fall, but kind of what's the long-term plan? And is that something you all are working on, or is that a post-election project?
It is a post-election, a product backlog, as we call it. It is in the queue, so to speak, and there will be a phase two. So that's where that would fall.
Anyone else? Go ahead.
Not a question, but just a compliment. We have been on those. I'm Hillary Hall from Boulder County. With the, we've been looking at the web apps, and we're very excited to use it for the fall. We think you guys have done a really great job with the pieces and the functionality and the user interface. So thank you guys for all the hard work.
Sure. Yeah, thank you for that. I appreciate it. And I'll pass it along to the team.
Sure.
You have another one?
I have another question. So you mentioned there were five major risks that have been identified and that you were working on plans to mitigate and all of that. Mm-hmm. Can you talk through those risks? I mean, they might be so technical that maybe that wouldn't be of interest, but can you give us a sense of what you're looking at and what those plans look like?
Sure. The first one is what's called distributed denial of service attacks. And, again, not to bore you with a lot of technical ease, and I'm not a technical person per se myself, but that's basically where outside bad people, for lack of a different term, secure methods and means to basically throw so many requests at the server that it crashes. And that is Rich Schleip, who's our security officer, is on top of that. But that's something that is becoming more and more common in the in all industries, banking especially. So we have things in place to mitigate that. It's almost impossible to completely eradicate it, if you will. And those are to capture the IP addresses where things are coming in from, so we know who those are, and we can control those from that aspect. So that's number one, and that's a tough one. Like you said, it's something we can mitigate, but we can't eliminate, which is we're aware of it. The next one is failure to meet the development timelines, and that's obvious from that perspective. And what we're doing with that risk is to meet frequently. I'm a project manager. That's what my job is to make sure that the timeline and the budget's met within those guidelines. We have daily stand-ups with the team. It's a 15-minute go-around with the developers and, what did you work on yesterday? Any roadblocks? What are you doing today? and what are you doing tomorrow? So it's very almost real-time information. Glasses back on. The third one, weak security controls, and that's something, Dwight, I don't know if you want to, do you want to talk to that, the weak security controls? Maybe.
Is this working?
Yeah, I think it works.
Yeah, it does. It should be. It was on when I left.
Isn't that one of the back light?
There you go.
Sure. Hi, I'm Dwight Shellman. I'm the county support manager for the elections division generally, and I was also designated as the liaison for the counties in the Department of State's development of this web application. So generally, this currently, all counties at all voter service and polling centers must be able to have real-time access into the voter registration database score in order to register voters, update voter records, move voters from one county to another, issue a replacement ballot either in person, well, or issue an in-person ballot as opposed to a mail ballot. Those are the primary functionalities. And the development that we're doing is basically changing the platform of the way counties will interact with the voter registration database. Currently, it's on a Citrix platform. Citrix licenses are very expensive, and frankly, it's a increasingly obsolete platform to use. So what we've done is developed basically a web services application that just uses an internet browser and allows the counties to input the data and obtain the information that they need in order to process voters at voter service and polling centers. And then that application basically exchanges data real time behind the scenes with the existing voter registration infrastructure. So the security concerns are that we will now have 64 counties, some of which will have 25 to 30 VSPCs, communicating via a web services application with the voter registration database. And the security concern, which has always existed but I think becomes more pronounced now, is that the integrity and security of the data in the voter registration database really is only as good as the security in the weakest or the least secured county. We are all very much interconnected, and the integrity of the data in the voter registration database can be compromised if counties are not observing the security protocols. And this is an ongoing discussion that we have with the counties. There is a web application steering committee consisting of county representatives and Department of State's representatives, where we discuss these issues on an ongoing basis. But the mitigation tactic there is to do everything we can to ensure that counties are complying with our security protocols. And right now, we go out in each election and we audit counties to make sure that they are in compliance with those standards. And in addition, what the Department of State has done is identify an application that, frankly, financial institutions use that sit on the county side of the connection and constantly monitor the workstation that each judge, election judge, is working on to determine real time if malware exists on that machine that could migrate up and compromise the voter registration data. The Department of State has made arrangements to purchase that for any counties who want to install it. And I don't have the exact numbers on that, but numerous counties have accepted that offer, and we expect that to broaden as we go forward. So we're doing everything we can to mitigate the security risks from, and this isn't a risk that was generated by this application. Frankly, it's always existed because counties currently all connect live with the voter registration database. But the platform for doing that is now much less proprietary, if you will. It is just simply a web services application. So we are working diligently with counties to make sure we're all on the same page and we're all observing those, you know, sometimes annoying but really important security protocols. So I hope that answers the question.
Representative?
How many counties have you identified that might, you know, have this issue?
Well, just in general, it's all 64 counties. It takes one election judge who isn't paying attention to basically compromise the entire database. In our security audits, I'm speaking from memory here, so please don't hold me to it, but I think in the most recent election, we identified one non-compliant county and immediately raised the issue with them, and they fixed it by the next day. My goal in my official title this year is to have Department of State representatives visit all 64 counties for the general election. Frankly, I have no idea if that's even possible, but we're going to try. But it's just that this isn't to get counties in trouble. It's to protect all of us. And the counties have been very good, in my experience, in stepping up to the plate and doing what they need to do. So we just hope everybody remains vigilant at all times.
Go ahead.
Yeah, I was just going to add on, I think one of the things that's really nice about this is the counties have a wide range of IT resources for them, and for counties that really don't have that depth of expertise, adding this on for those smaller counties is really the, you know, obviously cost-effective because it doesn't cost them anything, way to provide that additional support, and I think that was a good step that you guys took, reaching out with that, and then and also allowing counties that do have more complex IT departments to also manage what
thing.
They need to do and integrate their systems.
And just to follow up, is that the reason that there are some counties who aren't using what the Secretary of State is offering because they have their own systems in place, so it's not that they're opting out of more sophisticated security, it's just that that's already part of their practices? Or is it a mix?
I think it's a mix. I mean, I think they're, you know, the one county that I know of that has declined is a larger county, sophisticated IT staff, and I think my impression is they were concerned about the way this new application would interface with their network intrusion and antivirus, you know, protection that they have in place. So I think it's most the counties that have declined, to my knowledge, are the larger counties who have fairly or very robust IT staff watching these things anyway.
Thanks.
Okay, Ashley, Dwight, not to put you on the spot again, but the next one is lost or stolen device with sensitive data, the next risk. If you want to handle that one as well, because there's some county procedures, I believe, involved.
Sure. So federal law requires the state as the custodian of the data to implement safeguards to ensure that personal identifying information is not hacked or inadvertently released. And personal identifying information consists of driver's license numbers, social security numbers. Under Colorado's Act, an email address is considered to be PII, full date of birth. It's the kind of information that would be really attractive to identity thieves, basically. And so there are two aspects of this. One is protecting the data during the live sessions that election judges conduct in, you know, processing voters during an election. But there's another part of this, which is SCORE currently permits and must permit counties to download data that includes personal identifying information in some instances, because counties need that to do a variety of mandated tasks. And, you know, voter lists are public information once that PII is stripped out of the data. So what Scott has raised here is the second kind of flange of the issue, which is making sure that counties are not downloading data to basically a portable device, a laptop or a tablet, where the data is sitting on that device and somehow walks out of a VSPC. It's either stolen or it's misplaced, and whoever gets into that device can kind of indirectly get all of that PII. That exposes the state to the same liability that it would otherwise have. We're mitigating that risk by, number one, the web application does not allow for downloads of data. Those judges are working real time in the centralized database to do what they need to do. They're not downloading data, changing it, and uploading it. So that's the first mitigation. The second mitigation issue is one that we hope to discuss today at our steering committee meeting, which immediately follows this meeting, which is talking to the counties about ways we can all assure that sensitive data on any devices at the county level is protected to the best of our ability. And some ideas there are making sure that the devices are password protected with robust, secure passwords, separately encrypting the hard drives so that it takes actually two passwords to unlock the device. And then depending on the device, there are other strategies like remote wiping applications where if you realize a device is gone, you push a button in your office and you have just rendered that device basically a paperweight. There's nothing on it and it can't even be turned on. So those are there's a whole bunch of strategies there. It's a very serious concern, and we want to talk to the counties and find the way forward that works best for all of us.
Dwight, what did you say were the sensitive pieces of data under that federal law?
It's called Personal Identifying Information. And we use the acronym because we love acronyms in this industry, PII. And they consist of full date of birth, date, month, year of birth, driver's license number, social security number. I know there's other that I'm just blanking on.
Signatures included.
Signature image, which we do capture that in the voter registration database. As I said, email addresses under state law are not public. Those are the big ones. I'm sure as soon as I leave this room, I'll remember about three more, but those are the principal ones.
Any other questions on that risk? Okay, then the final risk, which is probably a pretty obvious risk, resource turnover and retention with any project or really any department. I mean, that's always a concern. We are fully staffed, have been fully staffed. We monitor that, of course, make sure everyone's happy, I guess, is the right approach. But there really have been no concerns with that. We have not had no one leave. Everyone's fully engaged. So that's just a risk that we wanted to make sure we kept an eye on. So those are the five.
Thank you.
Sure. Any other questions for me?
All right. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
All right, and the next item on the meeting agenda is an update from the Business Practices Group. Can we post that on the
screen?
And we'll go ahead and post this on the website, probably after the meeting. I don't think we've posted it yet, but for anybody listening or for the record, it'll be under the business or the election commission. Yeah, we have some people on the phone, but if anybody's, we're streaming too. So. And if anybody in the audience wants, we have some extra.
So the business practice group actually hasn't met as a group since the election, but we did send out the survey first round to the business practice group as well as the central region counties, and the central region counties are the majority of the large counties, to get a sense of where the data was going. Our next step will be to send it out to all the regions and bring back a more finalized version for you all. We won't be resurveying those who have already answered. We'll just be adding more small county perspective. We have a few small counties that are on the business practice group already, and so that information is included there. I think the big takeaways from it are our VSPCs were really, 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 really slow, and that we need, at some point, we are going to have to look at what those formulas are. And I think when you look at some of the data of how many people use them and how many registrations are done. The other thing that is a continuing trend that we saw from 2013 is the popularity of the 24-hour boxes. I think on page 4 we have some ballot drop-off numbers. And when you look at the counties that have 24-hour boxes, there's a pretty good substantial amount that people like using those. So I think the rest, again, the primary was obviously much smaller, and things went very smooth. We did ask some questions at the end on NCOA, and it looked like that it did have an impact on undeliverables. I think the data is there for you guys to take a further look at. My thought this time was really to give you it. These were the questions that the group had talked about in our May 22nd, I believe, meeting. And then, depending on when our next meeting is there, we'll have more analysis for you on it. Also, we previously had the state gather some data for us, which was the usage by date and registration numbers. And I did not ask them of that because I figured it should come from this group to ask them of that. And for those of you who saw the 2013 information, we had it by county, by day, what was going on in all the voter service and polling centers, so as well as what was registration and what types of transactions were taking place. Some of that is reflected in here, but not as solidly as the reports that Dwight and his team he moved. Dwight and his team put together.
So, Hillary, can I ask a question? Page 3,
yep.
One of the questions is, how many new registrations did you receive on Election Day?
Mm-hmm.
Is that in the context of the continuous processing, or does that include VSPCs, or
so we
what does that mean?
It should VSPCs is what that was for, because it's in the VSPC. It was a VSPC question.
Okay. And then does that also include the entire period that they were open, the 8 days, that's the total, or does that break out
somewhere? A separate question for that. Let me see if I can find it.
Yeah, right I was here. Looking but didn't see it, but I'm...
Okay, maybe printing them wasn't helpful, but neither was looking at it on the spreadsheet. Let me
definitely
see
helpful to looking online.
So on there's registration questions on page 3 as well, and it says how many, it's the very first question, how many in-office registrations did you have after the 8-day mailing? And that's where we were capturing the in-office.
Right, so that's all the continuous, so if someone used the online system or something like that.
Yes, and that then was the intent there.
The second to last question, the how many new registrations did you receive? That would be anything received throughout the 8-day period at a VSPC.
Yes.
Okay.
In-person Thanks. Registrations. Sorry, make that a little clearer on the next one. Also realized I probably should have gone across and then down. And looking at it again, it's like, oh, yeah.
I have a quick question, too. I noticed here on the how many registrations did you receive? Weld County had 40 new registrations and 12 voted. So were those just they happen to go get their driver's license that day and register to vote or what. That just sounds funny.
Which
page 3.
Thanks.
Weld County, how many new registrations did you receive on election?
Sorry, my page 4 flipped over. That's why I really put the...
I'm looking at El Paso County, had sort of a similar experience.
Let's see.
So on page 3, what are we looking at here? So 40 new registrations and 12 that voted.
Yeah, and then...
So I'm just
It might be because of the poorly written question, and that this may speak to... Oh, no, but they said... So maybe they're including all. I can follow up on that. They might have been including all their registrations, both those in office that they did on Election Day as well as at a VSPC, because that question didn't clarify that.
Yeah, like okay. That just seems like a huge difference. Thank you.
Well, and I think one issue that still exists at the counties that is when people show up to vote, they offer them a replacement mail ballot, too, and then it doesn't count as a person who voted. So they just hand you a mail ballot packet, and then you're registering, but you're then taking your ballot with you. And so they're not showing you as having registered and voted that day because you didn't go vote on a DRE or something like that. So I think there may be some issues.
They're showing you as a mail-in voter.
Gotcha.
Yeah, there's some issues.
All the other mail-in voters.
Right. The issue is how we're tracking those numbers. And I think that that's an issue with how many people visit a VSPC, too, because I had the same experience in Arapahoe County this year that I had in 2013, which was when I went in to try to vote a paper ballot. They gave me a mail ballot packet, and I said, I don't want to vote a mail ballot packet. I want to vote. I just showed you my ID. I want a paper ballot. Yeah. And, I mean, it took about a half an hour to get them to understand. And even 2 days before the election, I was the only person in Arapahoe who voted on paper. And so I called the clerk and said, you know, stop issuing mail ballots to people who want to vote on paper. So I think there are some issues with how we're tracking those numbers because, I mean, for anybody else who walks in and they say, do you want to vote on a machine or paper, and they hand you a mail ballot, you'll just walk out, fill out the ballot, and drop it in the box on your way out. But that is additional processing for the counties. It's bad for the voters because you could potentially get your signature rejected and you've already, you know, shown your right to vote and you don't get to cast your ballot that day. You know, you're casting it through a different process. So I think that's an ongoing training issue that needs – and, I mean, I went through it in 13, so I was surprised I went through it again this year. But
and were they finally able to issue the paper ballot? After going round and round, like they had the capacity to do that. That just wasn't how they were trained.
I mean, they all have the machine, you know, they have the printer there. But I mean, I had to leave. I mean, they had to call a director over.
Right.
I had to leave. My 9-year-old had to tell me to stop arguing with the election.
And is this a in statute for how it's supposed to reform, or is this a county by county they choose to?
I think it's just
give you a mail-in, or how does all that work?
I think it's just a training issue.
It's a training issue.
Yeah. I mean, for most people, if you go in and you just, you know, say, I didn't get my mail ballot, or, you know, the problem I had in 13 is I took my mail ballot in, and she said, well, that is the paper ballot. And I said, no, it's not, you know, and I'm here to surrender this. And finally, they just said, well, we don't understand what you mean. And so I went and voted on a DRE. But... So this time, I didn't take my ballot in because I didn't want to, you know, I don't have it. But, yeah, it took about a half an hour to explain. And then, it was not great.
Yeah.
And I think there are just training issues that go with that. And some counties aren't prepared to issue the paper ballot until, you know, maybe 3 days before. Some of them were telling me that they're sending people to the DREs until...
And these would be just election judge training issues?
Yeah.
Correct. And I think some of those election judges have done it for 100 years, and change is tough.
Yeah. So we just need to be sure that when we count people who visit VSPCs, that we're also including, you know, in the formula, people who are given replacement mail ballots, because... Otherwise, our VSPC numbers can look lower than maybe they actually are. And we want to be sure that our formulas are correct. So I don't know how to do that when we calculate it. But I know that everybody, you know, their VSPCs were slow and maybe there's issues with that formula. But I also don't want to, you know, see the mail ballot numbers skew that so that it looks like nobody was visiting the VSPCs. You know, everybody voted by mail when maybe they just
went
had
in person and then were given a mail ballot, which put them in that.
So category. In the past, you could only receive a new ballot from the county clerk. Is that correct? You had to go to their office?
Right.
And now, can you still go to their office?
Well, no, you could always go to a polling place. Yeah, you can go to the office, but you could go to a polling place and just vote instead of your mail ballot. Because, I mean, in primaries, they were all mail anyway. You know, so it would have been the same process as 2 years ago. It just was, I think with, you know, all the mail ballots, they're prepared to give you a replacement mail ballot, but they don't have stacks of the ballots. For, you know, for one reason or another.
Yeah, and I could swear we asked that question of how the replacement question.
Yeah, I just think we
and I can't remember if we got that out of the data from the big the other data or if we got it out of this data. And even with again, it's a primary. We can't draw a lot of conclusions, but to your point, it is. The replacements are part of that equation and how, who comes in and visits. And so, and that's also the part of this, and not to do today, but for to take a good look at is, I mean, we did this fairly quickly, and I'll take it over with the business practice group, and really how do we refine this so that we can give this to counties going into the general? What else do we want to add to it so they know it's coming that also isn't, you know, that's reasonable. It would take like 7 additional hours to collect the data on or whatever. But and so that's also what I would love from you all is to, you know, for us to take another meeting to come back and really, you know, what was it? And I'm going to do it with the business practice group as well after because they all practice filling it out. So because it seems so clear when you're having a team write it and you review it with other people and when y'all are talking about the same thing, you forget there's words missing. So so that would be great. So.
Any other questions or business practices?
We are meeting on the someday in August, fairly soon. Sorry, I can't remember off the top of my head. Little Friday motion. And is there any other things that you would like to me to discuss with that or put on the agenda? If you even know them now or if something comes up, let me know. I know we'll be talking about the survey. We'll be talking about practices, what worked, what didn't.
You know, one number that... at some point, and I don't even know if the counties track this, but and it kind of bleeds into the next discussion, but we have a lawsuit in Conejos County on Monday about the return time. And I guess I would like to know, and what happened was because Conejos is all the mail in Colorado is now processed either through Albuquerque or so we had ballots that were postmarked on the 20th in Conejos. That didn't arrive at the clerk's office until the 26th. And so they weren't counted, and now there's an election contest because the number that weren't counted is higher than the number, the difference. It was a sheriff's race on the Democrat side, and it was decided by, I think, 17. But they ended up with, like, 60 ballots that came in after the 7 p.m. deadline. And I don't know if counties track how many ballots come in after the deadline, but I think that that's really a question that we need to have some serious discussion on in the session next year because, you know, if it's taking 6 days for mail to go through a rural area, you know, then we probably should think about revisiting that deadline and treating it maybe more like a Uecava or something like that where it's postmarked and therefore counted. Because I feel that, you know, I mean, from the election contest side, I think the law is clear at 7 p.m., but it may be just an issue of trying to enfranchise more people because that's a lot of ballots actually for the number of people who vote in that county. That was a whole lot of ballots to arrive after Election Day.
Yeah, absolutely. And they should, so... The process that's supposed to happen is the ones that you get returned after Election Day, you still receive them into SCORE. And so SCORE should be able to produce
a list.
Vote credit list after. I know that's how we get our number. Well, we also count them, but we also get our number afterwards is They should because you still reserve vote credit for it, even though your ballot didn't
get counted.
Yeah,
okay. And I think Dwight's ready
to look at that. Yeah.
Well,
yeah.
Dwight's ready to tell us about
that. Well, statewide practice.
It's actually a specific rejection reason in SCORE, so we should be able to pull that centrally. It's received after 7 p.m. That's the ingenious name that we gave that rejection reason. So we should, and they will continue, county should continue receiving in those late ballots all the way until they actually close their election in SCORE. And from my personal experience, I can tell you that counties also receive them after that date, and those won't be reflected in SCORE, but those probably
it's
aren't material.
Less. I mean, those are, it's onesie, twosies. At
yeah.
Point.
Right. So,
but the majority of them, it's really that your first mail pickups later in that week.
Right. So, Dwight, maybe we could you generate that report for the next meeting?
Sure.
And the question I also put out there, what didn't seem like a question, was did we want the other reports that we did from 13 that you guys generated for us from SCORE? It was the showing the activity, which would have the replacement by county by day, and then also showing registrations that showed what were out-of-county moves, what were new county, and what were reactivations, that sort of thing.
I think that'd be really helpful, yes.
I think those queries might still be set up.
Yeah, so we would just basically generate those same reports, just so we're comparing apples to apples again.
I think that would be great.
Okay.
And if we have any questions, I think our business practice group will probably be in the middle of these ones, and we can take, if there's more questions that we need to answer, then
okay,
can
sure.
use that. Thanks.
You bet.
Anything else for business practices?
So I feel like a while ago there were conversations about how VSPCs would actually be operating with the web app and the Citrix and having to move voters between the two and things like that. And I'm assuming there's been conversation about like how counties are going to approach that. Is that something you all are still talking about? Have you figured it out? And so I'd be interested in just hearing more about what that's going to look like if you all know, and if not, just kind of keep that on the radar.
Yeah, I think I know conference they'll be discussing it. I think really it's waiting to see the final web app to make the determination of how to do that. Because we also got, when we first started the conversation, 161 hadn't passed, and the fact that we can continue to process people, voter registrations in the office, I know for ourselves, we're leaning towards we'll have a separate line for those who are there to register in person, where if that bill hadn't passed, it would have caused more of an issue, because we don't expect as many people to just show up. We're hoping other groups out there working with voters also get them to register before they show up, because that will help as well. But I don't think counties have made final decisions on that.
Thanks. And then I suspect I'm still trying to understand the survey, and I'll have more questions.
Yeah.
Do you want us to just send emails to you for the business practices group to, if there's questions we have, or just put it on the agenda again next?
That would be
what's most helpful.
So if you read it over and send me questions before the business, and I'll go look at my calendar and remember what day I've scheduled that for. And then I'll send that out to you all, and then we can ask them then. And then if not, I plan to bring more data back, and we can ask the same questions, and then the goal will be to get that to you guys ahead of time before the meeting.
Thanks.
So, thanks. Once we set that meeting.
January is for that meeting scheduled for the 22nd.
Thank you. I thought it was really soon, and I'm so calendar challenged right now. It's, yeah, July 22nd.
Martha, yeah.
I did. Thank you. One of the things that I, like Elena, maybe it'll take a little time to digest this, but there's a couple of things that strikes me would be helpful to know, both for the primary and then as we're looking toward the general and we're looking at gathering this kind of data then. And one would be provisionals, and have the number of provisionals dropped the way we think they're going to drop. And if they're, to the extent provisionals are being issued, what are the codes? Why are they being issued?
Can we pull that from the state, probably?
Yeah, we do that.
Yeah, so that would be great if we could get that for the primary, and then we'll definitely want that again at the general. And then I was also thinking about, as we look forward in planning locations, can we, and this is a harder thing to get maybe, but is there a way to get data about traffic at locations inside a county so that if there's a need to move or as we look at some are not trafficked at all and others are have long wait times or, you know, whatever it might be, that would seem to me to be really helpful data to get in terms of future planning about where sites are located and then within those sites how many process stations there are. And I saw that you did ask that question, how many computers were set up per site to process voters. I think that's really helpful data. A subset of that might be where were those sites and how many at those sites, and then as we look at moving forward how we plan.
Yeah, I think we can do that. I think one of the pieces that I guess it shouldn't be surprising, but is a little surprising, is where you'd want to put a location and where you can find a location. Yeah. And that's one of those, again, where we get the formulas as accurate as we can, right, that will help. Because then at some point you know, you're trying to make them as geographically dispersed as you can, and at some point you have to meet the number. And so that's the challenge there. I know by early August, everyone has to have their sites nailed down and sent in. And so perhaps an August meeting, that would be, we could get more data for what people are planning on those ones.
What kind of sites are those? Have those been, you know, schools? Like usually polling places like schools, churches, those.
Not as much schools and churches because of the two-week time period, especially for the, so there's two numbers. You know, there's a, it's like a, almost half you have to have set up before, and then you almost double those for election day. And so that's getting those 2 week ones are what where the challenge is. And I think it's also, that's one of the places to look at the formulas is leading up till we get closer to the election. That's also when the slowest use is. And so that it will be something for us to look at as a group. And that's been challenging. So then when you do the two, like I know some counties are going to do Monday and Tuesday for their additional, so that you kind of have a warm up day and make sure have a dress rehearsal. It's kind of nice, much better than the old election day where you opened up 200 polling places and went like this. Right. I mean, you planned. So those are easier. People will give you it for 2 days, but you ask them for 2 weeks. So, you know, they're all over.
So in the primary, what type of places were they?
Primary formulas matched motor V offices, and so I think a lot more of those were, it's just so much smaller than what's needed in the general. So a lot of them were county-owned facilities that you could use.
Okay.
And then the rest, that's why the next range of challenge, because you kind of have this pocket you can control, and then when it grows from there, that's where it gets more challenging.
And that was my real question that I wanted to ask. How much more activity are you anticipating for the general as opposed, do you have an idea of percentage-wise?
You know, I think that we're just now analyzing what we've seen in 13 and what we've seen in the primary, and it's hard to draw conclusions from those because they're such a lower, I mean, they're very, 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 very important, and the turnout is much lower on those. So I think we're analyzing what that means. So, and I think even if you just set up to the minimum that you need in all of those locations, that will more than, just based on the number of VSPCs you have to have, that will more than accommodate the volume. But to Martha's point is, do you have them in the right places with where the volume wants to go? So
that reminds me, I feel like we talked about tracking the drop-off locations as well and where they were popular and things like that. Is that something that is tracked where ballots are dropped off, or do we only know that they're dropped off or they're mailed back or they're, like, can we tell that in certain parts of a county, people are using the drop-off locations more than in others, or is that more anecdotal?
I think it depends on how the county tracks how they receive ballots. It's not a requirement. You have to show the 24-hour, and you have to have the logs that go with it. I know many counties of the larger ones, they will, you know, track by location, by box, what came from where. So, but I don't know how hard it is for. Well, and they have fewer. I don't know, Fran. What are your thoughts on that? Because for if we were to, or do, I would imagine large counties probably already do it to a good extent. I don't know about the medium and smaller counties. So, Fran, your thoughts? Finding her unmute.
Maybe she left.
Did she fall off?
I mean, I think you'd have to get pretty deep into the data because you'd have to go to the logs and see the judges. And at some of them, they're not counting them. They're at the box. They're just going to pick them up.
Yeah, they pick them up, but so...
And then they ping them back in when they get back.
But and then
you have to get in there and add it up.
Yeah, and that's something... Actually, I can talk at business practice group and ask how many, because I know for us, we count by box, and we have a box tracking that shows where that box came from, and we tie the numbers back together that way. I don't know if that's the standard practice. I mean, I know a lot of counties do it. I just don't know which ones. So I'll ask at business practice, find out.
And one of the things I could thank you. One of the things I could say about that election, or that part of it, is that maybe we could at least get the information from the counties that do it that specifically, so we have some idea of how that is playing out.
This is true. We do track it by the drop off. We don't have a 24-hour. Most, you know, some counties do, some don't, depending on the availability of having a video on it at all times. But we do track it coming in, so we know if it's in an appropriate place or not. So I think everyone, that would be easy figures to get.
And what's, so just to make sure we collect the information in the right way, to use that information to determine what? For the drive-up boxes, for the boxes, for the drop-off specifically.
Right. Well, it just seems like there was tremendous use of mail ballot drop-off versus return by mail, at least in 13 and initially from the primary. So do we need to do more around the formula on that? And how does that, you know, are people going to the VSPC to drop off their ballot? And so the VSPC is playing that function. Are they standalone? And just how does all of that intersect?
So all that information is in here at the macro level, but not by
location,
individual
right.
Location. Yeah, so you can see who dropped off, where did what ballots came from mail, what came up from a VSPC drop-off, what came from a separate walk-up but not drive-by drop-off, and then what came from drive-by drop-offs. So that is already in here. It's just
right.
Not the one on 30th Street collected this many ballots.
Right.
And the one,
you know, I mean, I think if that's easy for a county to put together, that's fine. But, I mean, I think that we want to be careful how much we ask, because the county is, I mean, with drop-offs and VSPCs, I mean, they have public meetings to talk about the VSPCs. They're putting them in the places that they can get them. It is challenging. I mean, Pueblo had to put one at the racetrack, you know. I mean, it's challenging to find somewhere that you're going to have, you know, 2 weeks of access and that you think you're going to get the traffic.
Yeah.
So, you know, they're going to do... I mean, there's not a single county that's not going to put it where they think they can get the best traffic. So, and especially with drop-offs, most of them have more than are required because you don't have to man those, and it's just for the convenience of the voters. So if it's easy to get, I think that's fine. But if a county actually has to go in and start adding it up and pulling records, I just don't think it's information that is worth the effort, I suppose. I think we should, you know that the clerks are going to, they know their people better than we could know their people.
Yeah, and that's why I wanted to ask, just make sure that we have an intention versus a curiosity.
Right. Well, I think
which
it's
is
more,
also fine.
No,
but
I think
like,
it's more
it
that we've had conversations or there's interest in revisiting the conversations around VSPC formulas, and I don't know that we can really do that till we've been through a presidential, so I think it's early, but if one of the calculations in reducing options for in-person voting is an assumption that mail balloting alone is serving the voters and that drop-offs are filling some sort of gap, I think having as much information as we can over as long a time horizon as we can about how voters are using the mail ballots is helpful. And I think, again, not that we need to set up new processes. I agree with Suzanne. I think that to the extent that information is being gathered or can be in an efficient way, just having a clearer sense of what do we know about voters and how they're using it? Because long-term, I think that will have to be part of the conversation.
Right. And I guess what I was trying to clarify is the value of, I think it's pretty easy to do it at the gross level. This many came from a drive-by drop-off. This many came from a drop-off at a VSPC. What I wanted to clarify was, do we really need to go to the next level of which one to make decisions at this level? And that's where I don't see what the return on that is, and I see it being much more tedious to get. But that's why I want to ask. I might be missing something.
I'm not.
And I, Dickie Lee, Hollinghorst, and I, I don't know whether you have this. I'm trying to remember. I was looking through this on your current survey, but I think it is important in connection with those gross numbers to have some idea of the wait times at VSPCs, and particularly in this next election, because the volume is going to be a lot more and will be an indicator of how this might be working overall in each of the counties. So I don't know how hard it would be per VSPC to talk about what the average wait times were and on each of those and how that relates to the overall information like drop boxes and so forth.
Well, yeah, why don't I bring that up with the business practice group of what some of their ideas are on how would you track that, and then come back with this group, and then you guys think about it as well, how do you track that, and what does it also mean, and what's considered a wait and when. So
I mean, I waited 1 minute, but I waited 30.
And then you have 30 added on.
So,
yeah.
31 minutes. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I was the first one in line.
Right. Until you started causing trouble.
Yeah. Until I wanted that paper ballot.
I have. And I have that. I have one more follow-up on that, which this is Dickie Lee again. So I think that compared to certain things that you might imagine would cause additional wait times and so forth, like the number of provisional ballots that were issued at a VSPC and so forth. I don't know whether you can do it, but it seems to me that might be helpful, and I don't know whether we get that or not, that those kinds of things. Or new registrations per VSPC, or a few things like that might affect those time frames.
And I mean, if there are counties that want to track that, I think that's fine, but I mean, that's not something we mandate, and for most counties, it's going to be zero, right, until election day, and then you might have some. I think the larger counties do a good job of sort of getting it out there just on social media that, if you can vote now with no wait or whatever it is, but we don't, that's always been kind of an exit polling thing that people ask about, but we don't. Nobody's really doing exit polling anymore. I just don't know if we're going to really get that kind of information without mandating it. And I don't think we're really too... I just don't think it's a big enough problem in Colorado to mandate it. Go ahead.
Martha Tierney, I don't necessarily disagree with you that it, we don't know what it's going to be like, I guess, would be my point for this fall. And if we really are going to have a big discussion in the future about changing the formula, I think we've got to be able to know whether or not there were huge wait times or where the wait times were in order to evaluate whether or not it's going to be a good decision to make a recommendation that the formulas get revised. So things like wait times and the how many computers were set up at each site to process voters, you can't look at one without the other, I don't think. So if you've got a VSPC and only has one check-in station and the waits are 2 hours, and you have one down the street that has five check-in stations and there's no waits, I mean, that's valuable information for us as we look to the future toward whether or not we have these formulas right.
Well, I think that's probably just something the counties are going to have to evaluate, whether that's worth tracking it to, attempt to get that VSPC number in a more reasonable way. I don't know how else you get the data except to just, have kind of these testimonials from the judges about, what the wait times are. Otherwise, we'd have to set up a system where I guess you took a number I don't know how we would even track it. It would have to be a DMV type system. So.
Yeah, and if you don't talk it over with the business practice group of how do you do it and also still keep doing business, and it might just be some sampling. I mean, maybe you just do it for, a time period where you have a big line. Okay, well, how long did it take that line to move? Because as a clerk, I do want to know that. I do want to know, where do you want to add more computers? And because I think it's probably finding larger locations where and fewer than it is, because there's places people want to go. There's places like you can try to stick one out there and make them go there, and they're just not gonna. So I think that data can be helpful, and when we look at those equations. So.
Go ahead.
And since I'm new to the committee, I may be totally off the mark here, but are y'all at all interested in like accessibility issues in these VSPCs, like what people with disabilities are experiencing? Because I could come up with some questions that might give you that data, but if it's not really about that, it's more just about wait time, or is that the only focus? Or are you focusing on the overall operation of the building?
Well, everybody files their ADA plan with the Secretary of State's office. And, we've done a lot of grants and things over the last few years, especially for the smaller counties where there are parking problems and there are no ramps and that kind of thing. I mean, in terms of, we've never surveyed it. You know, I mean, everybody has to have ADA compliant equipment. Yeah, I mean, if there are problems, we certainly want to know about it, and sometimes we would see it through a HAVA complaint or something like that, but we haven't really received any complaints about ADA compliance or the experience. But if you have information that, you know, you could bring back to the committee from the disability community, I mean, I'm sure that we would, you know, everybody here would love to know, you know, what kinds of things can be done better. I mean, Denver implemented the iPads, and you know, people have done things so that it's a little more user friendly. But you know, any feedback we get is certainly good. So I don't know if you have ideas about that, but certainly if you did, we'd love to hear it.
Okay. I mean, I do have a couple of things that were complaints, like just about the equipment not being ready to go when they get there. If somebody needs accessible equipment, it's not already up and running, and they do have to wait a while. I didn't know if that would be like something you'd want in this survey, and I could provide that kind of
how we get it. I mean, if they would remember, or because I don't know how you'd collect it. I mean, I'm not opposed to it at all. I think it's just how it's going to be anecdotal. And if they remember.
Or you're going to collect
right.
it. Or,
right.
or, yeah, or it's going to come in through an email. Or, yeah. you know, I mean, we could say how many complaints we get.
Mm-hmm.
Or the counties could, you know, forward their complaints or that kind of thing. But otherwise, the information is so dispersed because people complain to different people, right? They either just complain to the election judge, or then they send an email, or then they call us. Or, you know, there's just so many different avenues where that information is filtered. But if you have an idea of how we could compile it, I think that would be helpful.
Okay. So.
And what to ask.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah, I mean, going forward for the fall, especially. Right?
I'm sorry, what?
Is it going forward for the fall?
Okay.
What we would put in, so that people
right.
know ahead of time also. I mean, I think that's some of it. Like, we could ask now, and I don't know how much they would remember, let alone. I mean, hopefully they would, but I don't know. Have to go all the way back to the judges.
Okay.
So.
All right. Any other questions? Business practices? All right. The next item is a kind of more general discussion about the primary. I think I talked about the one lawsuit that we have pending. The only other issue we had on an emergency rule was just an issue in, I guess it was, Loveland/Larimer, where we had ballots that looked similar. They were both laid out the same, and Loveland was doing a fracking question the same day that of the primary, and so people who lived in Loveland were receiving two ballots if they were registered as in a party. They were receiving a ballot for the primary, and they were receiving a ballot for the fracking question. And some of the ballots, they would put both ballots in one envelope and deliver it back to one place, or they would mix up the ballots and send them to the two different places. And when we became aware of it, we just had promulgated a rule that they had to process those and set them aside. And then the clerks of the two subdivisions would exchange those ballots, and then since we only have authority on the county side, the county would then treat those ballots as they do a signature defect, because the affidavit wasn't
correct. It didn't go to the right place. So, for instance, when Larimer went back to pick those up, then they would bring the ballots back, and then they would send a letter to the voter indicating that, you know, your signature deficient, or in this case it was your ballot went to the wrong place, and you have 8 days to cure, much like we do with any other problem that comes in on the ballot. So that may be something we have included that in our permanent rulemaking, because we may see that more now that we now that municipalities and special districts can run separately, and we may see less coordination during the primaries or in November. And so if that continues, then we need to have a process whereby those ballots are still counted, because to the voter, I don't think they know the difference between sending it one place or another place, and why would you want to spend two stamps or, you know, make two trips? So that was really the only issue we saw kind of at the last minute. Other than that, Dwight, I don't know if you had anything from your reports out in the counties or...
Really, I don't think I have much to add. We visited just shy of 30 counties to conduct audits and also just generally observe how they were doing things, talking to them about problems they were experiencing or questions they had. All I can tell you is that the, not surprisingly, I guess, the volume at VSPCs in the primary election was just extraordinarily low. And I think that has as much to do with what was on those ballots or what wasn't on those ballots, you know. So that's the only thing I can think to add.
I have a question, Suzanne, about what you said about Larimer County, and they had, you know, their ballot initiative, and then we had the primaries. So, you know, in the primary, of course, only the parties get to vote. Were ballots going to Larimer County for the ballot initiative or whatever it was, you know, to unaffiliated also?
Right. Well, and that's probably, I mean, that's why most clerks don't like to coordinate questions in a primary, because the clerks are just, yeah, the clerks are just, you know, from the county clerk perspective, you're sending out your ballots to, you know, people who are registered R or D. You're not sending out to unaffiliated. Well, the city question, you have to send out to unaffiliated. So if you coordinate it, I mean, I don't really know which is better given what happened, but if you coordinate it, you know, then you're sending a ballot to everybody, except certain people don't have the party on there, you know. And then you have a second problem, which is what if somebody goes ahead and votes the city question and then decides, hey, I want to affiliate, because unaffiliated can affiliate up to the day of election. So then you would have a problem because you had somebody who voted this city question who then changed their mind and said, I want to also do this. And, you know, how do you track that and manage that? I don't know whether it's better to do what happened. I mean, what we actually prefer or what we probably need to think about is at least the ballots need to look different. The envelopes were different colors, but the ballots were not different colors. And that created a lot of confusion, because when the judges were processing the ballots, they didn't automatically see. And so before we told them, you need to take it out and, you know, look at the stub and see whether it's yours, the judges were just processing them through. And then when they went through the counting machine, they were getting, you know, rejected. And by then, we didn't know whose ballot it was. So those votes, you know, didn't get cast, basically. And So we need to think about how to differentiate those ballots, or Larimer did encourage, and so did we, Loveland, to not do the election on the same day. You know, but they can choose to do it whatever day they want. Sure. And maybe it's a issue of saying you can't run your own election on the same day as a statewide election unless you coordinate.
Or just put in big bold letters, use this envelope for this ballot.
That won't do it.
It don't work.
that won't.
From your words.
No.
All the colors have to match.
No, that won't work. No, we need to fix it on, I mean, we'll never fix it on the voter end. We have to fix it on the county and the city end and the processing end, because, you know, people just aren't going to they don't read the instructions. You know, they voted 20 times in the past. You know, I don't need to read these. I mean, yeah, you know. So, anyway. But.
And Hillary, can you talk about the Boulder County experience? Because you did it the other way, which was that you coordinated a local election and had that instance of mailing to unaffiliateds, and then they could affiliate and all of that. Did you have any issues, or was it pretty smooth?
Actually, it went pretty smooth, but it did cause severe brain damage of my staff having to make it go really smooth, because it's the programming of it, your voting systems aren't naturally set up for it, and so you have to have a pretty good tech team for the manipulation of the data to get that straight. And then from a process standpoint, though, it actually was pretty straightforward. With we had selected a different ballot style that only had the county issues on it, but was still from the House district. It was also the complexity, like this ballot didn't have a lot of complexity to it, and so that also made it not so hard to do, because we could make it so that if you affiliated, you pretty much had two different styles depending on your party for two different House districts, and so that also made it manageable. Had we had to have a lot more options, like, you know, if it happened in a bunch of different Senate districts and that sort of thing, that might have, I'm not sure we'd have done it. But we also thought, I mean, they really needed to do it in this time period. They were going to do it near when we were doing it, and again, to eliminate that voter confusion. And it was, you know, with 30,000 unaffiliated voters that were impacted by this, and so we really felt the best service was to go ahead and coordinate it. And it worked out. It worked out really well.
Yeah, and I
with
just,
effort,
right? And you know, there's a policy question in there too, which is, you know, these are the party's primaries, and do you want questions on the ballot? So I mean, that's always a separate.
But yes, we've had that question before too.
So it's kind of a complicated issue. And, you know, these are the elections at the local level are just as important to, you know, many people as the state level. So it's just something we need to probably be aware of and be thinking about in terms of the confusion it causes.
Yeah, I was going to say this one was related to the floods, and really had it not been something like that, because there's not a lot of reasons you couldn't wait until the fall other than you just didn't want to wait till the fall. And so that was this one for funding and bonding. It really did have to go, so that was another factor.
Right. I mean, I had the same experience in the counties that I visited. I probably visited five, mostly just – I think I only went to the large metro, but – really slow VSPCs. I didn't see any activity, even on election day. I think I saw one couple at Jeffco. That was it.
Bless you. Yeah, someone to vote in person.
Yeah, you know, because you want your 9-year-old to experience that with me.
We made it too convenient for our 9-year-old.
All right. Anybody else have anything about the primary or? All right, then I guess that is the end of the agenda, and we need to set another meeting. Yeah. So does Friday afternoon, is that just perfect for everybody?
I like it.
Oh.
And then maybe at the next meeting we'll put on the agenda talking about the next report we have to do and how to, once we have some more data, then we can do that. So does everyone want to stick with Friday afternoon, or you want to move it to something else?
Great. It's fine.
When is your next business?
Our next business practice group is it's July 22nd.
Okay.
So if
probably
you could
want
give
to do
us
it after that.
Yeah, and if we could have, you know, we also have conference and UAT and VSBC rollout during that time period. So if we want, I would like to get more data for you guys to see from across the state. So if you could give us, if we could schedule it a little bit later in August, that would be fabulous.
Like, when's the mock election scheduled? Is that
the 18th?
Yeah.
How about if we did the 15th of August? Right before.
Right before the mock.
And then we could, and then we could talk about the mock at the next one.
All right. And do noon again? Sure. All right. So the next meeting will be August 15th. We'll schedule noon to 2. We'll have updates from both the groups, and then we'll talk about the report. If anybody wants to add anything else to the agenda, just email Steve. And we'll... All right. Then we are adjourned.
Thanks.
Thanks.
Excellent arguments. I was surprised, but really encouraged by that. Like that the judge was like, "What the hell's the harm? Show me the harm." I mean, that's exactly what he should have said. I mean, you could see a judge take.